Dr. Clarence Bass was a professor of theology at Bethel Theological Seminary, and he told the story of something that happened early in his ministry when he preached at a place in Los Angeles. He thought he'd done quite well as he stood at the door greeting people as they left the sanctuary. The remarks about his preaching were quite complimentary until a little elderly man walked by and said, "You preached too long." Well, he wasn't bothered by the remark, especially in light of all the positive comments. But just a few moments later, the same little man walked by him again and said, "You didn't preach loud enough." He thought it was odd that the same man came through the line twice, but when he came through a third time and said, "You used too many big words," Dr. Bass walked over to one of the deacons who stood nearby and asked him, "Do you see that little elderly man over there? Who is he?" The deacon said, "Oh, don't pay any attention to him. All he does is go around repeating everything he hears." Sometimes the only way you can get the truth out of people is to listen to what they say behind your back. And sometimes statements are true, but they may not tell the whole story. One day a ship captain recorded in the ship's log, "First mate drunk today." It was a true statement, but after 5 years, it was the first incident that the mate had been drunk while on duty. And so the mate came to the ship's captain and he pleaded with him to amend the statement, but the captain refused. He said, "What I said is the truth." Well, the next time the first mate was in charge of the ship, he recorded in the log, "Captain sober today." Yeah, takes a moment. It was Winston Churchill who said, "Men occasionally stumble over the truth, but most of them pick themselves up and hurry off as if nothing happened." Probably most of us have done that at some point in time. That is a statement that can likely somehow find us relating to in some way. One of the greatest passages on truth in the New Testament is found in John chapter 8. And one of the most familiar statements in all the Bible is found in John 8. In John chapter 8 and verse 31, we're told that Jesus said to those Jews who believed on him, "If you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Well, the text says they answered him and said, "We are Abraham's descendants, and we have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free?" And Jesus answered them, "Most assuredly I say to you that whoever commits sin is a slave of sin, and a slave does not abide in the house forever, but a son abides forever. Therefore, if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed." All of us are familiar with Jesus' statement in John 14:6, where Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father. No one can come to the Father except through me." Jesus' words were true. Jesus' behavior exemplified truth. And very simply and very profoundly, he was truth and he is truth. And so we read in John 1 verse 17, "The law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." Before he was crucified, Jesus stood before Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor who had the power of judge, jury, and executioner. This powerful ruler was accountable to no one on earth but Caesar himself. And at this time, his only thought was how to handle this sticky situation in such a way as to please Caesar and to advance his own cause. Pilate was a typical Roman politician. He was skilled, he was devious, he was educated, and he was thoroughly cynical in his approach to life. It was the Passover, the great feast of the Jews. So Pilate was in Jerusalem, where he very simply did not want to be. and he had been awakened very early in the morning at the summons of the Jewish religious leaders to handle the case of this prisoner named Jesus. And John 18, verses 33 through 37 tells us that Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews? Is this your own idea?" Jesus asked, "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate asked. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You are right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world to testify to the truth." Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. Then Pilate asked, "What is truth?" Pilate's words to Jesus ring in our ears because they sound so current. What is truth? Pilate, the cynic, probably had no idea of the answer to his own question. He most likely wasn't sure that there was such a thing as truth. And the same is true with many people today. We live in a civilization that will admit the existence of little truths and technological facts. For example, it's accepted as truth that elements have certain chemical and physical properties and that bodies in motion behave in a predictable way. But many people deny the existence of ultimate truth, the concept that Francis Schaeffer called true truth. For the Christian, however, truth exists, and it is ultimate, it is rational, and it is real. But I'm not talking about mathematical facts or scientific facts. For the Christian, the truth always centers in the person of Jesus Christ. There is no fact, there is no statement, there is no truth, there is no doctrine that has real significance except as we see its meaning as it is filtered through the life and the teaching and the example of Jesus Christ. And so if we walk with him, if we are going to experience kingdom citizenship with him, if we are going to enjoy life with him, then we have to love truth. We have to obey truth, embrace truth. We have ultimately to live truth. It's not just important. It is vital, and it is absolutely essential. Truth matters always. And so Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." It is one of the most familiar passages in the Bible, but sometimes we forget that that statement is made in a context. Look back again at John chapter 8. In verse 30, the text says, "As he spoke these words, many believed in him. Then Jesus said to those Jews who believed in him," so he issued this challenge in verse 31. He said, "If you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed." That is, if you want to be my disciples, you're going to have to abide in what I say. "And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Now, the absurdity is given in verse 33 when they respond, "We are Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone." Well, quite simply, that was ludicrous. It was absolutely preposterous. Hard to believe, in fact, that they could make such a statement with a straight face. The entire history of the nation of Israel is one of bondage, then deliverance by God, followed by more bondage by other nations, then deliverance by God. In fact, the people in mass had their very genesis, their very beginning, their very origin in the bondage of slavery in Egypt. And they were in and out of bondage to someone for roughly the next 1,800 years. And then just 7 decades before the birth of Christ, these Jews had been subjugated by the Romans. And the Jews, even in that day, as they stood before Jesus making this claim, if they wanted to appoint a man to be the high priest, the Romans had to approve it. These people were not free in any way. And to say that they had never been in bondage again was absolutely false and absurd. In fact, it was so absurd that Jesus didn't even deal with it. He didn't try to argue or reason his way through that with them. Somebody has said, "There are none so blind as those who will not see." For them to have made such a brazen statement of untruth, it's obvious that they were going to believe what they wanted to believe. And so Jesus said to them in verse 34, "Most assuredly I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin." Whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. And that really is the point of the passage. Here is the focal point of that entire passage, that sinful habits and actions and behaviors, if they are not checked, they become part of you. They become the essence of who and what we are. As Peter once said, "By whom a person is overcome, by him also he is brought into bondage." The New International Version simplifies that by saying, "People are slaves to whatever has mastered them." Now, sadly, this account in John chapter 8 does not end well. It does not end well at all. So if you drop down, for example, to verse 48, we are told that the Jews answered and said to him, "Do we not rightly say that you are a Samaritan and you are demon-possessed?" They were not going to hear what he had to say. And then if you drop all the way down to, for example, to verse 59, we read that they took up stones to throw at him. This encounter does not end well at all, because Jesus made statements about truth that they did not want to hear. As we read in John 3, verses 20 and 21, "Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth, rather, comes into the light so that it may be plainly seen that what they have done has been done in the sight of God." People ultimately believe what they want to believe. And we are familiar with that statement, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." But Jesus could have said some other things about that as well, and they would have been true. For example, Jesus could have said, "You shall know the truth, but the truth will be hard for you to hear." This also would have been a true statement. And in fact, a lot of what Jesus said was hard to hear. For example, in Matthew 19, when the Lord talked about how God views marriage and divorce, and who has a right to be married, and who has a right to be divorced, and who has a right to remarry, the response of men was, "This is a hard saying. Who can hear it?" A lot of what Jesus had to say was hard to hear. There are at least 5 different books that I found on Amazon that you can buy by different authors that have in the title "The Hard Sayings of Jesus." And the fact is, there are many of them. "You shall know the truth, but the truth will often be hard for you and for me to hear." And in this context of John 8, that was certainly true. That's true, I believe, because all of us bring certain baggage and certain backgrounds to every encounter with truth. Everything is a part of our diverse background, colors, prejudices, and blinds us. Everything that is part of our life experience colors the way that we listen to what God wants to say to us. That's why, for example, that others can often see the truth about you more quickly than you can see the truth about yourself. And that's why you can see the truth about me, dare I say, more quickly sometimes than I can see it about myself. Often we can all see more truth about others than we can see about ourselves. Going back to the Old Testament in 2 Samuel, after David committed adultery with Bathsheba, chapter 11, and then the follow-up in chapter 12, God sent Nathan the prophet to David. And you remember that parable that he tells. And at the end of the parable, David is saying, "Who would do that in my kingdom? this parable of this rich man who had flocks and herds, and one then a poor man had nothing but one little lamb that he just loved dearly and kept it in his bosom like it was his daughter. And the rich man has a guest and is going to have a meal. And instead of taking from his own flock, he goes and gets this poor man's only little lamb and kills it and eats it. Who would do that in my kingdom? Anybody who would take a pet from a neighbor and kill it for a meal, when he has countless sheep of his own, such a person needs to be severely punished. And Nathan says, David, this is not a story about lambs. It isn't a story about feasts. It's not a story about taking from someone who has little when you have much in terms of a pet and flocks. This is a story about you. How did David not see that? Now you could say perhaps that David was not aware that Nathan knew of his sin. I'm sure David had tried to keep this quite secretive about him taking another man's wife and having that man killed. But he knew that Nathan was a prophet. I find it hard to believe that Nathan would have come to just tell him this story about a man taking another man's lamb. And you might think David would have been a little more cautious than this in his reaction with the realization that there's a message for him probably in what Nathan is talking about. And then I'm convinced that if others knew of David's sin and if they were present when Nathan told this parable to David, some of them would have likely gotten the point immediately. Whoa, it's coming. I can feel it. I know where he's going with this. How was it that when Nathan told that story to David, David seemed to have no clue that the antagonist, that the bad guy in that story was him? How was he blind to that? Because truth is sometimes hard to hear. In fact, sometimes we can go into abject denial of things that are crystal clear to everyone else. We've all been in that situation, have we not? Where we are delivered some news that no one wants to receive. Maybe it's about our own health. Maybe it's about the condition of a loved one. Maybe it's about some tragedy that's occurred. And in our minds, we try to find ways to allow that this just cannot be right. This surely can't be true. And we've all been in a situation where we've seen others denying the reality of what is so obvious to everyone else. How can they not see that about themselves? And it is that same ability to deny that leads us to sometimes end up saying things like, I don't gossip. I know other people might gossip, but I don't do that. I inform sometimes. I tell things like they are. I'm honest about things. Maybe that's what you mean, but I don't gossip. Leads us sometimes to say things like, well, I don't lie. I would never think about lying. I may misspeak sometimes, and I may massage the truth a little bit so that I don't hurt anybody's feelings, but I don't ever lie. I withhold things, and everybody does that, but I don't lie. This ability to deny is what leads us to say things like, I don't complain. I'm not a critical person. Other people may be that way, but again, I'm just honest about things. Sometimes, again, we don't see ourselves, things about ourselves, truths about ourselves that others so clearly see. You shall know the truth, but the truth is sometimes hard to hear. Then Jesus could have said, you shall know the truth, but first it may well make you miserable. And the fact is, before truth liberates your soul, it may indeed make you very miserable. The interesting thing about the gospel is the fact that before it can save your soul, you have to admit that you are lost. And that's sometimes an uncomfortable thing for many people. Receiving the truth demands an honesty that not everybody is able to summon. To accept truth is sometimes so painful that some individuals would prefer to live in self-deception than to just deal absolutely and honestly with the truth about themselves. And it needs to be said that you can do that. You can live in self-deception, and God will let you do that. One of the most frightening verses in the Bible is 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 11 and 12. The text says, "For this reason, God sends them a powerful delusion so that they will believe the lie, and so that all will be condemned who have not believed the truth, but have delighted in wickedness." This is God saying, if you want to believe a lie, if you don't want to come clean, if you don't want to be honest, if you never want to deal with the truth about yourself, about how you deal with others, about what you need to do, about how you ought to live, if you don't want to do that, God says, then go right ahead. He'll let us do that. Unvarnished truth often makes people miserable. And sometimes that misery is a good thing. That's the only thing that can stir them and spur them on to do better. You think about Saul of Tarsus in Acts chapter 9. We are told that for 3 days after his encounter with Jesus on the road to Damascus, that Saul did not eat or drink anything. He totally fasted for 3 days. Why do you suppose he did that? He did it because he finally had to come face to face with the truth that he did not want to see. We don't know a lot about the background of Saul of Tarsus other than the little glimpses that he gives us, but it's interesting to me that in the Damascus Road experience, in response to Saul's question, "Who are you, Lord?" the Lord said to him, "I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you have been persecuting." And Jesus then said, "Saul, let me ask you something." Notice this. "Why do you continue to kick against the goads?" This wasn't the first time Saul had been confronted with uncomfortable truths about Jesus Christ. Evidently, he had learned and heard much about Jesus. That was his, he'd been exposed to who this was, and he was trying to eradicate it to such an extent that Jesus said, "Why do you keep fighting? Why have you continued to fight against me?" In essence, the Lord was saying, "I've been goading you, I've been prodding you. Why do you keep fighting?" And now Saul comes face to face with the hard truth, with the stark reality that he had been resisting. That's the realization. "I have been resisting. All this time I thought I was serving. All this time I thought I was fighting for God. And now I have to face the hard truth that I'm fighting against God." And for 3 days he did not eat or drink because he realized that there's a choice now that must be made. He had come to see the truth and he knew he needed to act on it. You shall know the truth, and the truth sometimes makes you miserable. In Luke 6:46, Jesus said, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, if you are not going to do the things I tell you to do? Why are you saying I am your Lord if you're not going to do what I say?" In Acts 10, we encounter one of the most absurd things seen in the Bible. This was regarding animals that Jews were not permitted to eat under the old law. You recall Peter goes up on a housetop to pray, and a sheet comes down in a vision, and there are animals, and the Lord tells him to rise, Peter, kill and eat. We have a response here, and this whole account was regarding a restriction that had been changed under Christ's law regarding the eating of meats, but Peter was not aware of that yet. However, this is the Lord speaking to Peter in Acts 10, verse 13, and the Lord tells Peter to rise, kill, and eat. Yet Peter's response was, "No, Lord." Think about that for a moment. "I have never eaten food that is unholy or unclean. No, Lord." Consider that. Those words don't go together. If he is Lord, you don't say no to him. And if you say no to him, then don't call him Lord. As Jesus asked, why do you call me Lord if you are not going to do what I tell you to do? Sitting in the doctor's office doesn't make you well. At some point, you've got to decide that if you believe what that physician is telling you, you're going to have to start doing what they're telling you to do. And sitting in a church building is not going to make any of us spiritually well. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying it's not important to be here. I'm not saying that it's not God's plan that his people meet and worship together. It is. I'm just saying that at some point in time, we have to take what we pray and what we're saying and what we promise and what we hear and make it part of our life. Here's what Jesus said, you shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free. Jesus told a parable in Luke 15 of a young man who got tired of living at home. He got really full of himself. He decided that he knew better how to live his life than his parents. And so he left. But he eventually comes to understand a painful truth that he's going to have to act on, and it's going to be hard for him to act on. But ultimately, he comes to realize that home is where he belongs and that mom and dad aren't really the tyrants he had made them out to be, and that maybe they know a little more than he thought they knew. And facing this kind of truth can make you miserable. But dealing with it rightly can be very liberating. And so he dealt with truth, and because he was willing to face truth, and because he was willing to face his responsibilities to the truth and change in response to the truth, truth made him free. Freedom from the pig pen. It got filthy clothes off his back. It put a ring on his finger that had the family signet on it. It put shoes on his feet that was to say that he was no longer a slave, but a son. Truth got him cleaned up and fed and ready for a life of blessing and responsibility. As Americans, we are so accustomed to freedom, I wonder how much it really means to us sometimes. This is the land of the free. Do we not take our freedom for granted? Imagine being a Jew interred in a Nazi concentration camp during World War II, having seen family members die, having seen citizens and neighbors die, the horrid treatment, the starvation, the lice, the brutality, the violence. And then one day you wake up and you're free. You've been liberated. For all the difficulty of hearing the truth and the pain of accepting the truth and the change required in obeying the truth, the cost is vindicated by the outcome. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. As Christians, the truth of the gospel is changing our family's history for eternity. It's not just me, it's not just you, it's our children, it's our grandchildren and generations beyond that that we have the ability to impact for good. If you're not a Christian, do you love truth? Or would you prefer to live life saying with Pilate, what is truth? If you want to know more about what the Bible teaches, I certainly would be happy to meet with you weekly in your home and study the Bible with you. I'm sure others would be as well. If you are in sin and you know the truth and you want to be made free from your sin, the invitation is open always. Not just right now, it's open now, but it's open always. If you want to respond to that. Let's stand and sing a song together, and if you need to respond, we invite you to come.